assure you that I am who I say I am, Joel. May I call you Joel? Wherever works for you. Could we move to a booth and speak for a moment? What's wrong with right here? Nassar leaned in a little closer. I'd like our conversation to be private, and because I'd feel more comfortable with my back to the wall. Why? Because Mitch Rapp is trying to assassinate me. Skepticism was replaced by fear at the mention of the CIA man's name. I don't know who that is. Please, Nassar said, pointing toward the back. It was the first test. Wilson was not a stupid man, and after everything he'd been through, he had every reason to decline the invitation. But would he be able to? He had become obsessed with Rapp during an investigation into the accusation that the CIA man had been misappropriating government funds. It had turned into a self-righteous crusade that had collapsed on him when it became clear that those accusations had been disinformation from Pakistan's ISI. Men like Wilson, though, could never admit they were wrong. He believed with religious certainty that he had been undermined by corrupt forces inside the U.S. government, that he had been made a scapegoat in an effort to save the Washington elite from embarrassment. The question was whether that righteous indignation had been beaten out of him, or whether every demotion, insult, and threat had instead fanned its flames. Wilson passed the test when he picked up his things and walked to the back of the building. Nassar took a position to the right of him and nodded toward the man's tablet. I assume that's connected to the internet. May I first suggest you confirm my identity? He was impressed by the man's thoroughness. Wilson pulled up multiple websites containing photos of Nassar, then repeated the search using a British proxy server. Undoubtedly, he was concerned that this was a sting operation designed to see if he'd left his Mitch Rapp obsession behind him. Okay, you're who you say you are, he said finally. In response, Nassar pulled out a photograph of Rapp and slid it across the table. Do you recognize this man? Not a very good photo. It was stitched together from a number of different stills to create as clear an image as possible. We believe it to be Rapp. If you say so. Obviously all this is highly confidential, but he took Prince Talal bin Musaid out of the Monaco nightclub that was just attacked and may have murdered him. We also believe that he's responsible for the deaths of at least two more Saudi citizens. Wilson's face went blank again, and he slid the photo back to Nassar. Then I'm guessing Irene Kennedy wanted them dead. You should be talking to her. Is it possible that you're not aware of Mr. Rapp's resignation from the CIA? Bullshit. It's hardly a secret. Perhaps information like that takes time to filter to this part of the country. The man took the photo back and stared down at it for a long time. What's this have to do with me? I'm forming a task force to track him down before he can do any more damage. I need a man with outstanding investigative abilities, courage, and unimpeachable integrity. You came to mind. No. No. I've been down this road before. It's why I'm sitting in a North Dakota coffee shop. Mitch Rapp has a lot of enemies, but he's also got a lot of heavy political cover. I think I'll just stay here and keep my pension, if you don't mind. Nassar took the photo back and put it in the breast pocket of his jacket. I think your understanding of Mr. Rapp's position is a bit dated, Joel. He's left the CIA and begun murdering civilians, one of whom was King Faisal's nephew. Your government has authorized you to join my task force as my second in command. Wilson actually laughed at that. You want me to believe that you got Director Miller to agree to that? What Director Miller wants or doesn't want is irrelevant. I'm working directly with President Alexander. The president, Wilson said, his demeanor suddenly changing. It was an easily predicted transformation. Wilson would find the idea of going over the head of the man who had banished him irresistible. "I assume you'll want to confirm that," Nassar said. "Just call the White House and tell them who you are. They'll put you through."
"To who?"
"To the president, of course." Wilson chewed his lower lip, his eyes turning distant. It was almost possible to see the grandiose scenarios playing out behind them. Him being honored at the White House. Him refusing to inform Director Miller of the Rapp investigation's progress. And finally, him putting Mitch Rapp behind bars, while the people who had halted his prior investigation were accused of a cover-up. At long last, the nation would recognize Joel Wilson for the hero he was.
"What about Kennedy?"
"It's been her inability to control Rapp over the years that created this disaster. She has no say in this matter whatsoever."
"Yeah?
Well, in my experience, she has a way of deciding herself what she does and doesn't have a say in." Nassar nodded. "You're right to be afraid of her, Joel. You live in a lovely city, have a safe job, and you'll soon be eligible for retirement. I can't be blamed for trying, though." He started to stand, but Wilson grabbed his arm. "Sit down. I didn't say no."
"Then you're considering it."
"What exactly are you offering?"
"I don't understand the question."
"If I help you, I want my career back." It would have been expedient to simply make that promise, but Wilson wasn't stupid. The delicate balance of believability and fantasy had to be maintained.
"I'm a Saudi bureaucrat, Joel. I can't guarantee something like that. But I can tell you that the president is anxious to have this matter dealt with before it can cause an international incident. It's hard to imagine how having his gratitude could hurt your career."
Wilson stared out the windows at the front of the building, watching widely spaced snowflakes fall in the street. "Bringing him in is going to be a hell of a trick. He's not going to surrender. And even if he did, can you imagine the shit he has locked up in his head? What are they going to do? Put him on trial? Just let him sit there and spill everything he knows all over the courtroom floor?"
"I agree.
Mr. Rapp will strongly resist being taken alive." The implication was clear, but instead of recoiling, Wilson smiled.
"So, are you interested, Joel?"
"Hell yes, I'm interested." Men like him were so easily manipulated, so easily blinded. Mitch Rapp and his people were among the few things standing between the survival of the Western world and chaos. Wilson's indignation was made possible by the freedom that Rapp risked his life to protect.
"Then tell me what our first move should be, Joel."
"I hear that he built a fancy house outside of D.C. I say we tear it apart and see what turns up."
"Getting a warrant will be difficult," Nassar said. "What I've told you is all true, but probably wouldn't meet the standards of evidence required by your legal system."
The FBI man smiled cruelly.
"Remember how I said Rapp has enemies? Well, some of them are judges."
Chapter 41. East of Manassas, Virginia. All progress had now officially ceased. It was a situation that normally would have irritated the hell out of Joel Wilson, but tonight it didn't bother him a bit. The weather was clear and still, with a sky full of stars hovering over the house. Compound, really, in front of him. The gate was a modern copper construction, new enough that the green patina was still subtle. The walls were white stucco, rising a little taller than aesthetics demanded, and all of it was perched on the top of a low summit that looked out over the surrounding countryside. He and his team had passed a barn on the way in, as well as a few home sites in the beginning phases of construction. They were nothing but a distraction, though. This hilltop had one purpose and one purpose only, to provide a location for Mitch Rapp's castle. A young FBI agent was standing at the keypad that opened the gate, working with a screwdriver and alligator clips to gain access. He'd been there for more than 10 minutes, significantly longer than Wilson ordinarily would have tolerated without intervening. But not tonight. Tonight he'd just savor the moment. Earlier that day he'd spoken directly to Joshua Alexander. The president had confirmed Ali Nassar's story and made it clear that Wilson would be provided whatever resources were necessary. If he called the FBI, the local cops, the CIA, the NSA, or Jesus Christ himself, and they didn't jump, he was to use Alexander's private number immediately. The turnabout from exile to having the president's personal contact information had happened at disorienting speed. His official reprimands, his demotion and transfer to North Dakota, his wife leaving him, even his brief flirtation with suicide, were already fading from memory. What he hadn't shared with the president was how far he intended to take this investigation and how bad it was going to get. This was about more than Mitch Rapp going off the reservation, something a complete moron could have seen coming a mile away. It was about Kennedy's protection of him. It was about Senator Ferris abandoning Wilson and becoming one of Kennedy's most ardent supporters. The only things that could have brought about that betrayal were the threat of public disgrace or treason charges. How many other politicians were in her pocket? How many other government officials had she allowed to keep their pensions in the hope that it would prevent them from blowing the whistle? His phone rang, and the screen displayed a number that was still immediately recognizable. It had been a long time since Director Miller had called him, and he wondered whether he should even bother picking up. He didn't answer to Miller anymore. If anything, Miller answered to him. In the end, he couldn't resist. "Hello? I understand you're at Mitch Rapp's house with some of my people." "I thought it had been made clear that they're my people, Director." "Joel," the man said in an exasperated tone Wilson remembered well. It was like hearing his father all over again. But Miller wasn't his father. He was one of the men who had been subverted by Irene Kennedy. One of the men who would be exposed before all this was over. "I know you want revenge against Rapp and Kennedy," Miller continued, "and that you want to take us all down for corruption and God knows what else. But you need to put your personal feelings aside and think about what you're doing." "Are you afraid I'm going to dig too deep? That I'm going to find out what's really been going on? Because that's the job the president gave me." "It's the job the Saudis gave you, Joel. We don't work for the Saudis. The enemy of your enemy isn't your friend. Ali Nassar is a treacherous, fundamentalist son of a bitch who would slit his own mother's throat for, hell, for damn near anything. You've been in this exact same position before with the Pakistanis. Here's what I can guarantee you, Joel. Are you about to threaten me, Director? Because I should warn you that I'm recording this call." "Shut up for once in your life and listen. Nassar and the Saudis have a hidden agenda here. What it is, I don't know. But don't trust them, Joel. Stay neutral, stay professional, and you might get out of this with your skin." "Then you are threatening me." "Damn it, Joel," Miller said, raising his voice for one of the few times in their relationship. "If Rapp really has gone rogue, then this isn't about you losing your pension or getting transferred. He's going to kill you. Can you get that through your thick skull?" "Can I quote you on that?" The line went dead, and Wilson smiled. It had been a good try, but Miller's call reeked of desperation. He wondered how many more like it he'd receive before all this was over. The man working on Rapp's keypad suddenly turned and began walking in Wilson's direction. The gate was still closed. "What? Why aren't we in?" I'm not getting through that, sir. So when the Bureau told me you were competent, that wasn't true? Is that what you're saying?
Sir, I've never seen a unit like that. It doesn't have any brand markings or a model number. I couldn't even tell you what country it was made in.
Then go home.
Sir, if you can't do your job, then you're just in the way, aren't you? Now get the hell out of here.
Wilson turned his attention to an FBI SWAT team standing behind a massive vehicle fitted with a battering ram.
We can't get through the electronics, so we're going to have to tear the gate down.
The team leader looked at him, and then at the gate.
I don't think that's a good idea, sir.
What do you mean, not a good idea?
That's Mitch Rapp's gate.
I'm aware of whose gate it is.
Maybe we could call the agency. They might have a way to get in.
Wilson just stared at him. Are you afraid of damaging Rapp's gate?
The men all looked at each other.
A few actually nodded.
Sir, the team leader started again. Do you see those cameras up on the wall?
They're still filming.
He thumbed behind him.
And have you noticed that?
Wilson squinted through the darkness toward the barn. It took a moment, but he finally made out a lone human figure leaning on a cane.
Who is he?
That's Rapp's closest friend, Scott Coleman. He once jumped out of a second-story window onto a suicide bomber and beat the guy to death with a carjack. A fucking carjack, sir. And he's known as one of the more easygoing people Rapp works with.
Wilson knew exactly who Coleman was. He was the man who had set up the listening devices that had recorded Wilson's meeting with Senator Ferris. He was the man who had provided the audio that had destroyed his life.
Get in the vehicle and take down the gate. That's an order.
With all due respect, sir, fuck you. Keys are in it.
Wilson was stunned by the man's insubordination.
But now wasn't the time to deal with it. They needed to gain access, and if he had to do it himself, so be it. He climbed in and, after a minute of examining the controls, figured out how to get it started. Depressing the accelerator, he aimed the ram at the center of the gate. The cameras on the wall watched silently, and he found himself hoping they could see through the windshield, that Rapp would know exactly who had done this. He hit hard, expecting the enormous vehicle to sail through, but instead the gate flexed, absorbing the impact. He was thrown against the seatbelt, his head snapping forward with enough force to momentarily daze him. When he regained his equilibrium, he let out a lengthy string of expletives, reversed 50 yards, and floored it. This time the gate gave way spectacularly, and he slammed on the brakes, skidding to a stop in front of a modern structure completely devoid of windows. He had to wait for the men to come up cautiously behind him, but when they finally did, he leaned out the window.
Take down the front door.
Sir,
shut up! You're either taking down the door, or I'm taking down the whole wall.
The SWAT leader thought about that for a few seconds before pulling a ram out of the back. It took a few minutes, but they finally defeated the door and disappeared inside. The lights attached to their weapons flashed haphazardly around the entryway before going dark again as they penetrated deeper. Wilson lit a cigarette. He wouldn't put it past Rapp to have the place booby-trapped. Not his problem, though. That's what the SWAT guys got paid for. What would he find inside this vault of a house? Cash skimmed from government accounts? Souvenirs from illegal assassinations? Materials Rapp used to blackmail government officials into supporting him? If he found the latter, Wilson wondered what he should do with it. Certainly not hand it over. No, he'd hold on to it until he'd built a case so airtight that half of Washington would have to get behind him, while the other half threw themselves out of windows. And he'd be there at the center of it all, the media's new darling. Finally, a voice came over the walkie-talkie on the seat next to him.
We're clear.
Wilson jumped down from the vehicle and entered, walking over the smashed door and flipping a light switch. A tasteful glow grew around him, illuminating expensive woodwork, Asian-inspired furniture, and a bold painting of a flower that looked like it cost more than he made in a year.
"Tear the place apart," he said, throwing the painting to the floor in search of a hidden safe. Or at least, that was what he'd tell anyone who asked.
He began yanking drawers out of the sideboard as the sound of similar activity began filtering down the hallway. When he was finished in the entry, he skirted a glass wall that looked into an interior courtyard and entered what looked to be a child's room. One of his men was sifting gingerly through the contents of a shelf, and Wilson pushed him aside, dumping everything onto the floor.
"Move your ass! I don't have all week!"
The man stared nervously at the mess before following orders and picking up the pace. The reverence they afforded a psychotic CIA thug was both insulting and an impediment to getting anything accomplished. Wilson was looking forward to hearing their mumbled apologies when he shined a bright light into who and what Mitch Rapp really was. He heard running feet in the hallway and went out to see what was happening. A man with an iPad rushed up and held it out.
"I found this in the master bedroom, sir. It's password protected, but I think you'll be interested in the wallpaper image."
Wilson woke it and stared down at three smiling people looking back at him. One was a little girl, laughing as she tapped a croquet ball across the yard of a Cape Dutch house. Standing next to her was a woman in her mid-30s, dark hair and eyes, stunningly beautiful. Most interesting, though, was the man sticking his foot out to block the ball from finding its target. Mitch Rapp. A current photo, in living color. Wilson grinned and looked up, scanning the junction between the wall and ceiling for a security camera. When he found one, he approached it and raised the tablet toward the lens.
Chapter 42. Outside of Juba, South Sudan. The power was out again, but the breeze coming through the open windows kept the heat down. The 50-year-old mansion had been converted into a hotel years ago, but after Sudan's split, it had been largely shut down. The owner had been endlessly grateful when they rented the entire property, and he'd been working ever since to demonstrate that gratitude. Not only was the place spotless, but a sideboard in the living room was arranged with hard-to-get premium liquor. Azarov was reading the label on a bottle of bourbon while Rapp scanned the landscape beyond the windows. According to Black, this area was under the iron-fisted control of a rebel group that Abdo counted among his most dedicated enemies. The young sniper seemed confident that they were momentarily safe from the locals, and Rapp had no reason to question that conclusion. The kid seemed to understand the intricacies of the fighting around Juba.
"I haven't been able to find much information that I have confidence in," Claudia said, grazing on a platter of vegetables provided by their host. "I'm certain that Nassar is in the U.S., and 90% sure that he had a meeting at the White House."
"What about now?" Rapp asked.
"The best I could determine is that he went to North Dakota."
"That seems kind of unlikely," Black said. He was on his fourth beer and looked like he was starting to feel them.
"I agree. I'm working to corroborate, but it's difficult."
"If he's in the States, he's vulnerable," Black said. "It would be a hell of a lot easier to operate there than in Saudi Arabia."
"I wonder," Azarov said. "If I were him, I'd have requested an American security team. Mitch would hesitate to attack out of fear of injuring one of them."
"A frontal assault isn't feasible anyway," Claudia said. "Even if it succeeded, it would play into the narrative that Mitch has gone insane and is running around the globe killing people. He'd be hunted for the rest of his life, and anything he had to say about the Saudis would be completely discredited."
"It's like being teamed up with a bunch of old ladies," Black said. "I'll do it. I'll go to North Dakota or Iowa or wherever and pop that asshole right in the head. No muss, no fuss, no collateral damage. And Mitch can be 3,000 miles away with an airtight alibi."
"They'd still assume he was behind it, based on what's happened so far," Donatella said. Black grabbed another beer.
But Claudia said she could get Mitch off the hook for killing Nassar's two buddies. Three, Rapp said, causing the others to turn toward him. Kader Sultan was found dead last night, along with two security men from the Saudi intelligence ministry.
Let me guess, Donatella said. One shot to the head from a 9mm bullet.
That matches the early reports.
He's destroying his own network in an effort to keep it from leading back to him, Azarov pointed out. Is it possible that this is good for us?
Sultan was the last of the men that we've identified as being close to him, Claudia said. It's likely that his network extends further, but Mitch and I don't think anyone left would have direct knowledge of Nassar's involvement. He would have interacted with them through intermediaries.
Then punching a few holes in Nassar is the way to go, Black said. He's taken out his lieutenants for us. With him dead, the whole thing collapses. Job done. Mitch hangs out a shingle and makes an obscene amount of money taking contracts. How is this not a good plan?
Because the rest of us are experienced enough to know. We don't want to spend the rest of our lives being hunted by the world's governments, Donatella said. It's not as romantic as it sounds, Kent.
Then we need to demonstrate Nassar's involvement, Azarov said. Prove that he killed those people and that he's financing ISIS.
Agreed. But it's easier said than done, Claudia replied. The man doesn't leave behind a lot of loose ends.
Rapp's phone chimed as a heated discussion of their situation broke out among the others. He opened a hidden app and watched a series of jerky images being broadcast via a satellite connection. The gate he'd spent so much money on turned out to be worth every penny, surviving the first attempt at a breach before succumbing to a SWAT vehicle traveling at reckless speeds. His front door had held longer than expected, too, noticeably fatiguing the men who were now fanning out in his entryway. A man wearing a suit instead of combat gear appeared after the area had been secured, and Rapp squinted down at the image. Claudia would be pleased to know that she'd been right about North Dakota. It was where the FBI had sent Joel Wilson. Wilson began tearing up the room, ostensibly in a search, but really just to cause as much destruction as possible. Rapp had told Irene Kennedy that they should bury that piece of shit in the woods somewhere, but she'd thought moving against him would cause more problems than it solved. He wondered if she still felt that way.
Mitch, Claudia said. Mitch, what are you doing? Are you listening to us?
He didn't respond, so she broke up the meeting, finally coming alongside him while the others wandered off.
Are you all right?
She glanced at the phone and put a hand on his shoulder.
You must have expected this.
Yeah. He concentrated on Wilson as the man held a tablet up to one of the interior security cameras. He recognized the wallpaper picture as one taken of him playing with Anna and Claudia in front of her house in South Africa. Now the man had a current picture of all of them, as well as a shot of Claudia's home.
Who is he, Mitch?
An old enemy that I didn't deal with when I had a chance.
CIA?
FBI.
So now Nassar has solicited the help of the American government. I hate to bring this up again, but is it time for you to contact Irene?
He didn't respond, instead freezing the image and continuing to stare down at it.
Mitch?
How hard will it be for them to get into your tablet?
Hard. It would take even Marcus at least a week.
There's nothing on it, though. I use it mostly for reading magazines.
Can you access it remotely? No, it's not set up that way.
Why? What about the computer at your house in Cape Town? Could you access that remotely?
Sure. What are you thinking?
I'm thinking that with that picture, it's not going to take them long to show up on your doorstep.
She shrugged. We're not there, and accessing the information on my computer would be extraordinarily difficult, Mitch. I have confidential files on it from my time working with Louis. It would take years, even with the help of the NSA.
But you could get in remotely and make it easy, right? Wipe the sensitive information and change the password to Anna's birthday or something?
Sure. But why?
He ignored the question. Would it be possible to create some fictitious emails between you and me and backdate them?
Not too difficult, but they wouldn't be entirely convincing, particularly combined with the simplistic password. If someone looked closely, I'm not sure the scenario you're talking about would hold up.
Rapp nodded slowly, only partially hearing her. Nassara had to be dealt with, whether it blew back against him or not. That was a decision Rapp had already made. But if he could lead Nassar into a trap and get someone else to do the wet work, his life would be a lot simpler and probably a lot longer.
He tossed his phone onto the table in front of him. It doesn't need to hold up. I know Joel Wilson, and I can guarantee you that he only sees what he wants to see.
Chapter 43. Langley, Virginia, USA. Irene Kennedy closed the thick file on Ali Nassar's life and considered what she'd read. His early schooling had come from the Saudi madrasa system, but he'd moved on to an English university after that, an educational background that could create both radical Islamists and secular moderates. He was extraordinarily competent and ambitious, traits that defined both great men and evil ones. Which was he? In the world of intelligence, nothing was black and white. This situation, though, was more murky than most. Unfortunately, if she pieced it together in the most logical way, the picture that emerged was as ugly as any she'd ever seen. She was virtually certain that President Alexander had set Mitch on his current course without considering the consequences. And now that those consequences were making themselves known, he was scrambling for cover. It was a game that had been played by powerful men for thousands of years. The Iraqis who had attacked the nightclub in Monaco were associated with ISIS, and their pursuit of Prince bin Musaid after he'd escaped suggested that this wasn't the random terrorist attack that the public believed it to be. After acknowledging those two things, though, she was forced to step onto far less stable ground. It seemed likely that Rapp had sent Donatella into that club in an effort to lure bin Musaid to a location where he could be interrogated. The terrorist attack was a violent and messy interruption of an operation that should have been clean and quiet. Assuming that Nassar was indeed behind bin Musaid's terrorist activities, what would he think of Mitch Rapp's rescue of the prince? The answer was obvious. He would have no choice but to assume that bin Musaid had given up everything about Nassar's network, forcing the intelligence chief to get rid of anyone who knew of his involvement. The three men who had been killed so far all had unusually strong connections to Nassar. It was there that the web became even more tangled. She certainly wouldn't put the torture and deaths of those men beyond Rapp. But would he have had the resources to move so quickly? Doubtful. Would he have killed the security guard at the Brussels Hotel? Absolutely not. It seemed much more likely that it was all Nassar's doing. His survival now depended on cutting ties to ISIS and getting rid of Rapp. The question now was what action should she take? What action could she take? President Alexander had washed his hands of Rapp, but she wasn't Joshua Alexander. She very much appreciated Rapp respecting her wishes and keeping her out of this. But how long could she remain in the background? They'd been through too much together for her to abandon him. There was a quiet knock on the door, followed by one of her assistants entering.
Dr. Kennedy, there's a Special Agent Joel Wilson here to see you. He doesn't have an appointment.
She'd expected a call, but a surprise visit. Wilson was enjoying himself even more than she'd anticipated.
Thank you. Send him in.
By the time she could stand,
He was already striding across the carpet.
"Hello, Joel."
She began to extend a hand, but he just dropped uninvited into one of the chairs in front of her desk.
"I assume you've heard that you managed to get a search warrant for Mitch's house?"
"Yes." A smug smile played at his lips. "Word in this town travels fast."
Which was exactly what he wanted, she knew.
Wilson desperately needed for everyone to know that he had been vindicated, that he now wielded the power of the White House in his crusade to vanquish the corrupt forces lined up against him. She also knew that he blamed her as much as Rapp for what had happened to him. What he would never accept was that he had done this to himself, and that the penalties for his actions could have been much worse. If it hadn't been for her and Director Miller, Joel Wilson might have ended up in jail. Or dead.
"We've been able to determine with nearly 100% certainty that Rapp was the man in Monaco."
She sat, resigning herself to the fact that this meeting wasn't going to be as brief as she'd hoped.
"He's retired, Joel. He's allowed to go to nightclubs."
"I figured you'd say that. We've also been able to determine that he was the man who attacked the two security guards at that Brussels hotel. Tell me, Irene, is he allowed to do that?"
"What about the one who was killed?"
she said, genuinely curious. "He covered his tracks better on that, but we're working on it." She nodded.
"And what does all this lead you to believe?"
"That he's finally completely lost his fucking mind? I don't know what did it. The stress, the concussions, watching his wife get blown apart. Doesn't matter, though, because he's running around the world murdering innocent people. And I think we can both agree he isn't going to stop unless someone makes him. He likes the taste of blood, Irene. He's addicted to it." There was so much that could be said. About bin Musaid's involvement with ISIS, about Nassar's connections to the dead men, but mostly about Mitch Rapp himself. In fact, he despised the taste of blood. His entire life had been nothing but one sacrifice after another. None of it would make any difference, though. Wilson saw only himself.
"You're a talented investigator, Joel. You always have been. But your judgment's being clouded by your personal feelings. I'd urge you to clear your mind and apply it to the problem. If you do, you'll see that none of what's happened makes sense."
He actually laughed at that.
"My personal feelings? You're so blinded by him you can't see the bodies piling up around you. Hell, I just got testimony that last year he shot an unarmed Iraqi girl named Lala Carney."
Kennedy stiffened.
"Let me offer you a piece of advice, Joel. If you should ever come face-to-face with Mitch, don't mention that name. I've known him for most of my life, and even I wouldn't dare say it out loud in his presence. Do you understand?"
Whether it was what she'd said or how she'd said it, the FBI man's arrogance faltered. As a cover, he pulled out a photo and slapped it on her desk. It depicted Mitch, Claudia, and Anna playing croquet in South Africa.
"Forget Lale." He tapped the photo. "Who's this woman?"
He didn't have clearance to know her real identity, so Kennedy used the one the CIA had created for her.
"Claudia Dufour. What's her relationship to Rapp?"
"Personal."
"And where can I find her?"
"Presumably with Mitch."
"And the girl?"
"Her name is Anna."
"Did he take her on his killing spree, too?"
"No, she's not with him." There was no way Kennedy could lie. As odious as this investigation was, it was authorized at the highest level.
"She's staying with me."
"Excuse me? Was I not clear?"
"You kept this secret?"
His eyes lit up at the potential chink in her armor.
"Just because you don't know something doesn't mean it's a secret, Joel.
Claudia told me she and Mitch needed to get away, and asked me to keep her daughter so her school year wouldn't be interrupted."
But you're still going with the story that you have no idea where they are and no way to contact them. So if the little girl gets sick or falls down a well, you can't get in touch with her mother? I have email addresses for both her and Mitch. I'm happy to share them with you. He leaned forward in his chair and stared directly into her eyes. You know that I'm coming for you too, right, Irene? Of course I do. Now if you'll excuse me, I'm late for a meeting.
Chapter 44. Franschhoek, South Africa.
Why are we just sitting here? Joel Wilson said. We should be following them in.
Nassar watched the scene through the windshield of the SUV they'd hired. On the surface, it wasn't much different from Wilson's breach of Mitch Rapp's home, but beneath the surface, the differences were considerable. The men working to open the gate on Claudia Dufour's house weren't a well-trained FBI SWAT team. They were a random collection of his own people, local police, and men supplied by Mullah Halabi. It was a dangerously unpredictable mix, but it was Halabi's people he was most concerned about. While they were reasonably disciplined by terrorist standards, the contrast between them and his General Intelligence Directorate operatives was still rather stark. It made sense to limit Wilson's exposure to the ISIS men as much as possible. He glanced over at the impatient American and felt his fears diminish. The man had eyes, but they were glassy with a fervor that Nassar normally equated with Islam. While those men saw only God and their duty to him, Wilson saw only Rapp and the revenge that was so close at hand. The presence of the African police creates an unstable situation, Joel, and the chances of Mr. Rapp hiding at the home of a woman he's known to be involved with is far-fetched in the extreme. This is a job for soldiers, not generals. As if to punctuate his words, two shots rang out. Wilson went for the door handle, but Nassar grabbed his shoulder and activated his headset. Report. Two guard dogs, came the reply in his earpiece. We're clear. Copy. The compound is secured, Joel. We can go in now. What about those shots? It was nothing.
Nassar pulled through the gate, parking in a courtyard overflowing with palm trees and bougainvillea. Mullah Halabi's men were near the front door in what seemed to be a wary detente with Nassar's team. Wilson was blind to the obvious tension, instead focusing on irrelevant matters that so easily distracted Americans. In this case, it was the two dead guard dogs and a local policeman pinning a terrified African woman against a tree. When one of them slapped her, Wilson jumped out and ran in their direction.
Stop!
Nassar followed, keeping Halabi's men in his peripheral vision as Wilson pushed the policeman aside.
Who are you? He said to the woman.
Her words came out in an unintelligible jumble, so the policeman spoke for her.
She says she works here, that she lives in the servants' quarters at the back. Is there any reason to believe that's not true?
The man shrugged.
Calm down, Wilson said. We're not here to hurt you, and you're not under arrest. Now tell me, where is Claudia Dufour?
I don't know. She hasn't been here in many months. I care for the house.
She looked past him for a moment at the dead animals lying in the grass.
And the dogs.
He pulled out a photo and held it up to her.
Do you know this man?
She nodded.
Mitch, he's an American.
When was the last time you saw him?
When he came to help get Claudia and Anna's things.
So, months ago. She nodded.
How do you communicate with him? Do you have a phone number?
No, an email address. Okay. Go back to your quarters and stay there until I tell you to come out. She rushed off, and he turned to Nassar. Her story matches what we already know, that Dufour and her daughter have been living with Rapp in the U.S.
Agreed.
Questioning this woman would be a waste of time. Rapp wouldn't reveal anything to his servant.
He followed Wilson into the house, and a brief search turned up an office at the back. It was only 3 meters square and contained little more than a desk, a computer, and a single chair. Wilson immediately sat and turned on the computer. Not surprisingly, it requested a password. He swore quietly and rebooted it from a thumb drive. "Your computer experts still haven't been able to access her tablet," Nassar pointed out. "What makes you think you can get into this?" "People are funny," he said. "They feel safe in their homes. So while they secure the hell out of their phones and tablets, they tend to be lazy with their desktops. They want it to be easy. They want their kids to be able to get on, and they figure no one will ever have physical access to it." Nassar riffled through a stack of papers, but found nothing more than notes from the girls' school and receipts for inconsequential household products. Finally, he wandered back out into the main part of the house as his and Halabi's men tore the space apart. Normally, it wasn't his practice to get personally involved in these kinds of operations, but there was little choice. His life depended on the American FBI agent finding Rep. Every minute that passed without success increased the danger. After about 30 minutes, a shrill laugh filtered through the home, reaching him as he passed through Dufour's wrecked kitchen. He jogged back to the office and found Wilson grinning like an idiot at the computer screen. "I found her daughter's birthday on the calendar and reversed it for the password," he said. "I hope she's one hell of a piece of tail, because she isn't the sharpest knife in the drawer." "Is there anything of value on the hard drive?" "I'm less interested in the drive than the email," Wilson said. Nassar watched as he searched for all the correspondence with Rapp. "Okay, let's start on the date we know they left the U.S., Wilson said. "Yeah, there's an increase in email frequency, so they may not be together. Or at least they haven't been for the entire time." "I doubt Mitch Rapp would discuss something as sensitive as his location on a commercial account," Nassar said. "No," Wilson replied, opening and closing successive individual emails. "But he might not have to. Don't give this asshole too much credit, Ali. He's not an intel guy. He's just a killer." The FBI man suddenly jabbed a finger into the screen. "Right there." "What?" "It's a bunch of bullshit about Anna, but then look what he says. It hit 93 degrees today, but the sun finally went down a half an hour ago." Wilson dialed his phone and put in an earpiece. "Yeah, it's me. September 27. Where in the world did the temp top out around 93 and the sun set around 3:45 GMT? "Uh-huh. Yeah, I can wait." He continued scrolling through emails, closing most within a few seconds, but occasionally minimizing one instead. "Central Africa. You're sure? Are you going to narrow it down? Okay, I've got something else for you. On October 5th, there was audible shelling in the morning." "Yeah, it uses the word shelling specifically, so some kind of active war zone." "Right." Nassar left the man to his work and exited the house, crossing the lawn to a stand of trees near the rear wall. He glanced around him to make certain no one was within earshot, and then dialed his sat phone. "Peace be upon you, Director," Mullah Halabi said. "And you?" He deeply resented having to check in with the man, but it would be unwise to refuse the request. "I understand you're at the home of one of Rapp's women. Is the search proving fruitful?" Nassar's jaw clenched, but it was hardly a surprise that Halabi's men were reporting back to him. Having the volatile mullah tracking his movements so closely, though, unnerved him. As with Rapp, it was often hard to distinguish between the hunter and the hunted. "We believe that he may be in Central Africa. We are working now to pinpoint a location." "Excellent. I have many devoted men in the region. I'll be happy to make them available to you." Nassar wanted to reject the offer, but there was no practical way to do so. pointing out that the ISIS leader's African followers would be unpredictable and poorly trained would be an insult, and admitting that their presence made him uneasy would make the mullah question what he had to hide.
That's most generous.
Of course, Ali. My resources are always at the disposal of my loyal disciples. Nassar bristled at being lumped in with the illiterate cannon fodder that made up Halabi's cult of personality, but he did nothing that would hint at his displeasure. The ISIS leader was a critical tool in the subjugation of the Middle East, and would have to be deferred to until an opportunity to replace him arose. Joel Wilson appeared around the edge of the house and began rushing toward him.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to go, Nassar said respectfully. The American FBI man is coming.
May Allah be with you, he said, and then severed the connection.
I've got something, Wilson shouted,
showing no interest in who Nassar had been talking to.
Really? That's surprising, Joel. We've been here less than an hour.
In fact, it seemed quite incredible. While Mitch Rapp undoubtedly had a gift for violence, it was likely that Wilson was underestimating his intellect. Strength, speed, and steel nerves alone couldn't explain the trail of dead the man had left over the last 20 years. Was Rapp capable of making obvious mistakes? The FBI agent smoothed out a single sheet of paper on an outdoor table and motioned him over. Nassar looked down at the crude map of Africa and the various markings on it. The red circles indicate everywhere our satellites picked up significant explosions on the day Rapp talked about shelling. Combining that with the temperature and sunset data gives us a 90% probability that they're in South Sudan.
Impressive, but that's an entire country.
I'm not done, Wilson said. There was active fighting in a number of places in that country, but he mentioned in a later email that he was getting provisions from the main market and that it was more trouble than it was worth to drive. That means he's close enough to a main market to walk and hand carry food back to where he's staying. Then he made his fatal slip. He called the place he was staying the church.
And that's enough information for you to locate him.
I'm still cross-referencing with MI6, but I think there's a good chance. Main Market suggests a town big enough to have more than one, which rules out a number of villages with shelling close enough to here. My gut says we're talking about Juba.
And the church?
I don't know yet, but I'm guessing my people will have a bead on it before we go wheels up. How many non-operational churches can there be a few minutes' walk from the central market?
Nassar nodded, examining the map.
Excellent work, Joel. I was always confident that you were the man for this job. But now I have no doubts at all.
All true, but something in the back of Nassar's mind remained suspicious of the man's success. It was bordering on being too easy. And this suggested two scenarios. First, that Rapp would be aware that his emails to his woman could be accessed and used to locate him, in which case he was already 1,000 miles from Juba. Or second, that those emails were the bait for an elaborate trap. Of course, Nassar recognized that it was also possible that he was just being paranoid, but it wasn't something he was willing to bet his life on. Wilson's life, though, was of less importance. While it would be inconvenient to lose him, he was hardly irreplaceable, and his death at Rapp's hands would go a great deal to further the narrative Nassar had been crafting.
I was speaking to the king earlier, and I've been recalled to Riyadh on an urgent matter, he lied. I tried to explain to His Majesty that I was needed here, but he wouldn't be deterred. My men and my plane are at your disposal, Joel. I'll take a commercial flight home and return as soon as I can.
Chapter 45. Juba, South Sudan. The darkness in the alley went from deep shadow to impenetrable darkness and back again every few feet,
but Kent Black kept inching forward. Juba's electricity was out again, and all he had to work with was a few battery-powered lamps glowing in distant windows. It wasn't the safest time to be skulking around town, but the possibility of being jumped by a bunch of drunk rebels wasn't why he wanted to get the hell out of there. All that mattered was that he got back to the safari camp before Rap figured out he was gone. Black came to the mouth of the alley and was able to make out the vague shape of the church's listing steeple against the stars. It was only another 75 yards to the east pedestrian gate, then 5 minutes inside, and then he was out. Easy, right? One of the men Abdo had sent to watch the place was sitting in an open jeep across the street, but he was dead asleep, with an AK clutched to his chest like some kind of security blanket. Based on his age, he'd probably only recently traded up. The next 50 yards went pretty well. Quiet, good cover, and no more of Abdo's men. The gods of war had taken pity on him. Or so he'd thought. When the church's east wall came into view, he saw a lone figure standing next to the gate. The sheer size of him, and the slightly crooked stance acquired when a bullet had crushed his right femur a few years back made him easy to identify. Barnabas Malse. Black froze. He'd had some training in hand-to-hand combat in the army, but that had been a long time ago. As far as he was concerned, getting any closer than 300 yards to a target was just plain stupid. If God had wanted people to fight with knives, he wouldn't have given them sniper rifles. Skirting the building next to him, Black managed to leave the glow of a distant fire behind. He was wearing tattered fatigues and had smeared his face with dirt in an effort to blend in, but the effect was marginal. With a little backlighting, though, it might get the job done. He shook out his shoulders to loosen up and then started walking casually toward Malse. The man separated himself from the wall he was leaning against, but didn't make a move for his sidearm. If there was one thing the African didn't lack, it was confidence. And that conviction didn't just come from his freakish bulk and the terror he instilled in everyone for 500 miles around. He was also in the habit of kidnapping and eating albino children. When Black had first heard the stories, he'd thought they were just a bullshit legend. It turned out that they were true. Malse believed that his unusual diet made him invincible in battle. The African said something, and Black just pointed to his ear in a way that suggested he couldn't hear. It wouldn't register as being unusual. A significant percentage of the rebel population was about half deaf from the constant shooting and explosions. His heart felt like it was trying to fight its way out of his chest by the time he got within 10 feet of the man. Malse still hadn't recognized him or made a move for his weapon, but he did speak again. Black nodded vigorously at whatever the fuck he'd said, hoping to draw attention away from the knife appearing from his pocket. When he got inside of 5 feet, he lunged, driving the 8-inch blade into the man's stomach. Malse looked surprised, but other than that, the knife didn't seem to make much of an impression. He grabbed Black by the front of his fatigues and lifted him off the ground, throwing him into the church's perimeter wall. The former ranger managed to keep his head from impacting, but still hit hard before dropping gracelessly to the ground. He'd barely managed to get to his knees when Malse grabbed him again, this time with one hand on his throat and the other on his thigh. Black found himself being lifted again, but managed to grab hold of the hilt of the knife protruding from Malse's stomach on the way up. He yanked it sideways, opening a long slit that poured blood down the front of the African's grimy blue jeans. He still didn't seem to notice. This time Black hit the wall upside down and almost 7 feet up, impacting the ground a moment later face first. He saw Malse coming for him again, but was too dazed to do anything but lie there wondering if the magic really worked. If all those murdered children really had made him immortal. A human figure appeared from the shadows behind the African, and Black squinted at it, trying to make sense of what was happening. A hand clamped over Malse's nose and mouth, and he was dragged out of sight. After that, there was a quiet crunching sound, and then nothing. Black tried to push himself to his feet, failing the first time and then managing to regain enough equilibrium to succeed on his second try. When he did, the dark figure was standing in front of him, backlit as he had been before. Not Monse, way too small and straight.